to try and kill the tie off. The vital away goal in the first leg and the Libertadores group stage sealing goal in the second.
Back in and kept alive as well and rifled into the back of the net. Oh, that is just exquisite. Fidel Martinez, you are sensational.
All right, let's get stuck in, Mr. Oliver Walton. Well, first of all, just to...
No big intro.
Well, hello, welcome along to Walton & Windsor's Libertadores podcast, the only podcast, one of the only podcasts in English exclusively dedicated to the Copa Libertadores.
It hasn't started unless we have the intro.
100%. Here we are on a beautiful balcony in the centre of Buenos Aires. The sun's shining, the avocado on toast has been eaten, and we're all ready to get stuck into the match day experience because Ollie and I went to the Monumental River Plate Stadium at the weekend and they played Córdoba Central. And Ollie, I just want to throw to you straight away, mate, because it's something really special. If you've done it, you'll know exactly what we're talking about. Fan culture and football culture in Argentina is something so rare in life because it genuinely does live up to expectations. What did you think about it? What were your main takeaways?
I mean, you've got to start with the fact that the Monumental, it's got to be mentioned, it's been renovated in the last few years. It is now the biggest football stadium in South America, which is... That might not mean much to some people, but to get to go to the largest ground on a whole continent and a continent that is so synonymous with footballing greatness, I was really excited to go and see how it looked. And it does not disappoint at all. It is one of the most impressive renovations of a football ground, I think, that I've ever seen. It's quite funny we're talking about this after a weekend where Old Trafford's falling down and has a built-in waterfall these days. And, you know, David Moyes is walking away from the Stadium of London and West Ham, and particularly the Stadium of London. You look at that, London Stadium, sorry, and you think...
That's a bit of Spanish, by the way, creeping into Ollie Wilson's.
Yeah, like going the wrong way round with them. It's... I look at what West Ham could do in the same way that River have done with the Monumental. It should be so attainable. Because let's face it, right? Argentinian football isn't flush with the money of Brazilian football, let alone the money of English football, any European, major European league at all. And I know there was obviously backing from factors outside of the club itself. It's been done for being able to host like major tournaments, etc. But they have created the perfect way to turn a bowl stadium with a running track into a up-close and personal-feeling stadium of a proper football ground and just a football ground. It doesn't feel like anything else now when you sat inside it, while maintaining the perfect... Look, some might not like a drab concrete bowl. I think it kind of looks like raw and it has that old-school feel. It's kept the history, the heritage of the club. They've been able to keep the statues outside the ground, keep all the motifs and River logos that are on the ground, while building inside an incredible football going experience. And you have to laud the Argentinian Football Association, River Plate, and whoever designed this, because it's better than anything that I've seen in terms of a renovation in European football.
Yeah, I think the point that you make about Argentina is really important as well. And for me, when we went inside the Monumental, what strikes you immediately, and this is from two people that I'm not claiming we're born and bred here, but certainly over the years I've got to know this country and the people and the culture a little bit. What strikes me, Ollie, is like this country, and I have massive affinity with Argentina, but there's just everything's a little bit gritty and a little bit rough around the edges. Mm. And because there is huge poverty, there's huge problems in this country. You know, 50% of people in this country or something similar live under the poverty line. And what's crazy about the Monumental is you go in and it feels really modern straight away. And it's managed somehow to hit that sweet spot between feeling modern and clean and you can take your lad or your daughter or whatever, and there's a few families there, but it also undeniably has this raw essence of being a pure, earthy, old-school South American Argentine football ground. And I think the fact that they've managed to balance those two things is incredibly difficult, because normally you get one or the other. Boca's got the old-school Argentine, but it's falling apart. It's a piece of shit, basically. Mm. Even though it's still, in my opinion, La Bombonera for iconic status is probably the best. But I just think for River and the Monumental to balance those two things of old and new is something that Argentina in general have found difficult to do, and River have done it.
Well, let's what they've done is, for instance, the top deck especially was, I went there a few years ago before they had the renovation. The top deck was very much a, it's just concrete steps. They were red with kind of a red sash going in a V up to the center of the deck and then back down again. So it was in river colors, looked a lot like the shirt, etc. And they've stripped all of that out. They've put seats in all around that top level, all around the lower bowl as well. And then they've taken the lower tier of the old stadium, and all they've done is they've built seats going down from that lower tier in extra crescents to make it, rather than a curved side next to the football pitch, straight lines around all four sides of the football pitch. They lowered the pitch slightly so they could provide a nice bit of steepness to those seats as well, so you get good sight lines in most of the positions in that football stadium. But if you were turning up on a Libertadores night when you can have away fans, you would still be intimidated as a Venezuelan, Peruvian, even another Argentinian side football team looking and going into the Monumental, because from the outside, it's close streets. It's got that gritty environment, as you say, that edge to it when you're walking down to the ground and when you're going in. And it's only once you get in, you think, oh, this is pretty nice, actually. Oh, it's a kind of a bit of a family feel to it. We were in very much a family orientated section, although we were just away from the main kind of ultras, just a way down to our left. Never felt really in any sort of threat or danger. We had a lot of kids kind of staying up late around when here where we were watching the game. But I still think it's wonderfully intimidating. And that's what you need to keep in modern day football as well. You know, I mean, I'm lucky enough. I've been to the Bernabeu. I've been to what was the Camp Nou. I've been to San Siro, Rome, the Olympico. Like, any modern stadium that's had a big renovation doesn't feel like a rough place to go. And it almost feels inviting for away players, away supporters, as opposed to going in and think, ooh, welcome to hell kind of thing.
Yeah, and, you know, it also, it's worth noting, for those of you who don't have, like, a comprehensive geography of the city, like, it's fairly centrally. Like, it's in the relatively affluent north of the city and river, sort of traditionally the richer of the two clubs in the Boca River rivalry. But, I mean, it really, from when we went to the ground, we saw a fight, like, en route to the ground, basically. Mm-hmm. And then we saw, like, a huge police presence kind of steamrolling, I mean, like, the fans that were in the street, no? Like, I mean,
the fight was, like, a bus journey away from the ground and two
sure, but it was on there, like, I was in match mode by then. But, what, you know, you kind of have that.
Stone Island jumper was on for Windsor at that point.
It's certainly got all that. And then when you get inside, it's just incredibly modern. I mean, we were in as you say, like, in quite a nice part of the stadium. But there were some great characters around us. What about the actual match, Ollie, and when things were going? I mean, let's first talk about the gentleman to our right-hand side, because when you think about iconic football fans, and you think about some of the shitty Football Factory films that have been made. Actually, Football Factory is not a bad one. What's the shit one? Green Street.
Yeah, the Hollywood version.
Absolutely. Football Factory is actually a decent film. But when you think about some of the characters, I mean, the lad in front of us, just describe him first, Ollie, and we'll obviously overlay some pictures so you get the whole package.
Well, look, there's always a worry that if you go to, like, the family section, we were near the kind of ultras and everything, but I always like being in a bit of the thick of it. I don't necessarily want to be treading on any toes and forcing myself into anywhere where you don't want to be or anything like that, but you want to be in with the atmosphere. And initially when we walked down to our seats, as I say, there was a lot of families and young kids and everything, and that's fine. You want kids to be able to go to the football. It's a huge part of the culture here. But thankfully, just in front of us, away to the right slightly, maybe two seats down, was quite clearly a man who wanted and probably has been down in the main supporters section behind the goal with the band and all the chants. And he's clearly doing like a daddy daughter night with his young kid. And there is no way he wanted to be where he was stood. And I mean stood, because he didn't sit down for the whole game. I had to stand up behind him, even though it was all seated. He was just stood front row. Nothing's blocking his view. He doesn't need to stand, but he just wants to be so touching distance to the ultras down there. And he is just living his best life. He's full Adidas River Plate tracksuit, which, let's not forget, that's an expensive piece of attire in this city. A tracksuit top alone will cost you probably 150 quid. To have the matching joggers as well, it's another 75.
Throwing the Sambas, 150. I mean, you're talking monthly wage and a half for his outfit.
100%. Then you've got the what look like designer shades. Bearing in mind this is a 7:45 kickoff and the sun goes down at 6:30. Designer shades, short back and sides, but with slicked back long hair on the top, into, which I didn't actually notice until I saw some of the video I took of him, it was a ponytail on the back of his head, but the smallest of ponytails. Like, I remember being about 7 years old and trying to grow a Baggio ponytail, and this is kind of what my crappy white boy ponytail looked like. And then he had the ring, like big gold ring on the finger, and he's just giving it all 90 minutes. Just the arm out, flexing, chanting, cheering. And then he's calling down to his mates down below, half time before the game, trying to just get involved with them. He's getting drinks ordered up from, rather than just going off to, you know, the bar area in the area we were in behind the stand. He's not willing to leave. So he's getting the guys that are carrying like bottles of Coke and Fanta and cases of drinks on their head around the stadium. He's getting them to pass them up a tier, and he's giving them money down there because there's no way he's leaving his seat. There was a point where there were a load of people who weren't meant to be sitting where we were, or maybe did have seats, and it was all a bit jumbled up. We're like, oh, we're meant to be here, we're meant to be here. Steward comes down, has a quick word with him, and the steward's like, oh, I'm not messing with this guy. No, no, he's not moving. We don't need to move him. It's fine. Steward walks off. This guy's straight back to it. He's getting his daughter in a headlock when he's happy, when River have a good chance. He's going absolutely bonkers when they score. It was everything that you love about a football fan when you don't have any idea what they're saying. Yeah. And I will still say that if that guy is in a ground in England, it's a very different feel, probably, and it probably annoys the living daylights out of you in the same way it probably annoyed the living daylights of some of the locals that were there. But if you don't know what they're yelling and screaming, it's just a fantastic watch. It's almost as good as the game.
Better. Way better. I think one of the hardest things to do in life, as everyone knows, is to genuinely live in the moment. And whatever you want to say, I don't know his backstory, his family story, you know, what's going on in his life. But that man, for those, you know, 2 hours or a bit more, because he's in the ground way before, he was absolutely in the moment. And you talk about connection between football club and the fans, which is often kind of an esoteric thing that people throw up. The connection between the club and the fans doesn't exist anymore because of salaries and blah, blah, blah. There's such a disconnect. But he is connected to that football club, like totally, totally connected to that football club. And the fact that he's leaning over the barrier, as you say, he just wants to touch like the ultras and he just wants to get on the pitch. It was an amazing, amazing thing. And, you know, this is Ollie and I, but, you know, you've been to more games than I, Ollie. But like, you know, I've been to a fair amount of stadiums in my life in England and abroad. And yeah, it's something different to see what. To see that kind of character in full force. And not to mention, by the way, the kids around him, he obviously was with his daughter. There's a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old right in front, and they are bang involved in it. I mean, mm-hmm. really, like, into the chants, going nuts.
7-8-year-old girl who had a Lanzini shirt, number 10, who was jumping up and down directly on the row in front of us for, like, 80 of the 90 minutes. Like, they're striking poses at halftime, taking Instagram pics, just happy to be at the Monumental and loving being on the night out. And then you've got, like, down the front, obviously everybody knows, or a lot of people will know, Boca have the big high fence that loads of the ultras behind the goal will go and cling on to and climb up, and they'll watch from, like, halfway up. And River doesn't have that at all with this new setup that they've got, especially. They have a slightly high-ish, it's probably about head-height fence down at the very front, at the front row of the tier. But that doesn't matter because there's young kids at the age ranging between probably 3 and 13, I would say, that are clinging on to that fence. And you can just see the steps from being a youngster on the fence at the front row to working your way to the middle section of the ultra.
The images of evolution,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's perfect. And they have this connection because they're members, they pay into the club, they get other things rather than just the season ticket as well by being there. And then they have this bond because they are going there late night, 7:45 kickoff. Some of them are later kickoffs as well, particularly when you get into the Libertadores, but the youngsters will still go with the dad and he'll take them every other week. They'll get integrated into the football club so much more, especially being down at, like, I don't know if you see many like really young kids, for instance. You know, Palace have got their area at Selhurst Park where there's kind of like a the ultras group of Crystal Palace. I don't think I've ever seen like young kids right in the thick of that, particularly above the age of 30, under the age of 13. Whether that's a good thing or not, I've got no idea. But it does mean that they're right in the heart of what it means to live and die by River Plate. And they'll have that all of their football viewing life, which is kind of a quite a romantic way to look at it as a supporter, you know.
I also really like the three-year-old had a Matias Suarez shirt. Now, Matias Suarez left the club years ago, so the dad's obviously bagged a bargain somewhere because, like, that shirt's not really in circulation. I just wanted to make one additional point before we talk about kind of the atmosphere during the game. And that is that, for me, the Monumental is what Argentina could be. It's the potential of what Argentina could be, because this is a country with a lot of problems, right? But 80, 90 years ago, it was one of the richest countries in the world. This country has incredible natural resources. It has meat, leather, grains, lithium. It has mountains and deserts and vast plains and beaches. It's a huge landscape. It has incredible old European-style architecture. It has, I really like the character of the people here. It has so much going for it. Nobel Prizes to Argentina than any other South American nation. So much going for it. Pretty high Q comparatively to the rest of the continent. And it could be great. And it's like the Monumental. It's like Argentina could be that. Like, keep the essence, keep the core, keep the grittiness, and just polish it. Put that extra little bit of money into it. And suddenly you've got a hell of a product. And I felt that with the Monumental. It's exactly what Boca are trying to do, by the way, because... the conversation's ongoing about La Bombonera. Do we rip it up? Do we renovate, etc., etc.? It's one of those like San Siro that just rumbles and rumbles and rumbles on, Ollie.
It's just a ground that should never be touched. It will lose. If they change La Bombonera, whatever they do, they'll get rid of what makes it so iconic, and that's the side of the stadium that has all the boxes on. And if you lose that, it's just a bowl. And unfortunately, the Monumental can get away with it because it's created its history by being just a big grey bowl that has a raucous atmosphere inside. The Bombonera, everybody knows it for the high fences behind the goal, the fanatical fans, and the side that is filled with just pretty much boxes and has the dugouts underneath it. And if you lose that, you lose a huge amount of character. And that's the thing. That's the side that's kind of holding them back in terms of how they want to expand, because that's where they want to chop that down, either build over the road and have a kind of tunnel going underneath the Bombonera, which seems insane to have a, particularly with the driving in this country, to have a football stadium's columns that close to a road going over the top of it with a tunnel underneath.
Nearly done about seven times in the taxis. Just on La Bombonera, I mean, I think it's the most iconic football stadium in world football. I massively enjoyed my experience there. I thought it was absolutely astonishing. But the problem is, Ollie, a club like Boca, and this isn't a unique problem for Boca, because loads of clubs have wrestled with this. You've got to talk about the next 100 years. So I completely understand La Bombonera. If you possibly can, you keep it, you renovate it, you add. But it's such an odd chocolate box of a ground. I don't know how you do. And if Boca are like, right, how are we going to compete with these Brazilian clubs for the next 100 years? How are we going to get more money on a match day? They might have to knock it down. That's obviously part of the conversation that's ongoing. Clearly, in a perfect world, you renovate like Anfield and the big boys in Spain or Madrid, certainly. But what... I don't know. It's a really, really difficult one because you've been there. I mean, it's tatty, man.
Yeah, it shakes when the fans get going.
So good.
And it's, but it's a tough view. It looks great under the lights because it's got like that iconic silhouette, and it has a better kind of visual eye when you're walking into it than the Monumental for numerous reasons, the way the checkpoints are, the extra bit of space that you get around the ground for seeing it kind of under the lights, and everything looks better from a distance. But yeah, it's a rundown old football ground. But again, at this point, considering there's other ways for Boca Juniors to get money out of the club than renovating and knocking down what is one of the best assets for the club, which is the iconography of the visual of that football ground, basically. How does it rate the Monumental? Have a football ground, of any ground that you've been to?
Well, it's almost like I think South American clubs are a different category than Europe, because it's a different ethos. There's different financial constraints, etc., etc. I think that, like, this isn't like a Boca versus River thing at all, and we praise the Monumental loads. I do just think La Bombonera is just so unique for me. Yeah. I think it's so utterly emblematic of South American football, and that's so specific to Boca, I should say, rather. That I think it's kind of the greatest I've seen here. I'd love to go to the Maracanã. In Europe, it's just a different feel, isn't it? I mean, obviously Anfield, I'll always say, because you're just so, so tight to the pitch, tighter than the Monumental is. Yeah. I mean, I love an old school ground where you, like, when the player takes the throw, they're thinking, Jesus, I'm close to the fans here.
Yeah.
And I like that. I think it just adds that bit
of
jeopardy.
You want to be able to hit him with a lighter or a coin, is what you're saying, isn't
well,
it?
Well, around here, you never know. Let's talk about actually when the game was going on, Ollie, because one thing I do find odd about South American football culture is when the songs are through the game, 100%. It's just constant 90 minutes of singing. But any football fan will resonate with this. When your side loses the ball and the opposition suddenly win it in the final third, you shut up. You maybe say to your mate, shit, like, oh, what's going to happen here? You don't start a song. And here, they just carry on singing when the opposition has the ball around the penalty area. And what do you think about that? Is it odd, right?
So, I think we were chatting with one of the American lads that was on our kind of Airbnb trip to the Monumental that we did this week. And he asked, how does this compare to an atmosphere in England? And the way I put it to him was, the atmosphere here is a constant, whereas European football is a reactive atmosphere. And I think I find pros and cons to it, because I remember when we were at Racing watching River batter them 6-2. And we admired the fact that Racing fans, or 6-1, we admired the fact that Racing fans, like, River had scored. And like when the fourth one went in, there was still no change. And the Racing fans were like, we don't care. We love this club. We're going to sing our hearts out till the very end of the 90 minutes. And they have songs that kind of basically say exactly that. And there is, again, there's something kind of beautiful about that with the relationship of the supporters. It's not just about, oh, win or lose today. It's about, well, it doesn't matter if we win or lose. We want you to win, but we're still just going to love this club. We hate the players sometimes. We hate the manager you bring in sometimes, but the club as a whole is part of us. And that's why we give our support for the full 90 minutes. On the other hand, it takes away sometimes the real pop of a football crowd. The silence. It's like if you have somebody, okay, the Spanish TV commentary that we get here, the Argentinian TV commentary we get over here watching on television. And it's, obviously, and it's constant. Señores, señores, they're just filling the void. It's like a radio commentary and it feels imposing on you. And it doesn't really allow those kind of changes in tone for a football game. And I think that's what you get with the atmosphere. It doesn't allow for a change in tone. There's not a nervy edge. You don't feel a tension coming in ever. You just feel a dum ba dum bum bum dum, the beat of the drum constantly going. So it's kind of a, do you like it or you not, really, at the end of the day, like what your taste is. And I think there is a time and place that you can really enjoy this, that constant beat of the music and the drum and the fans. I do think you're right. Like, a goal goes in and there's initial, like, oh my goodness, mate. Like, the third goal for River this week was an absolute cracker. And there was 10 seconds of, oh, amazing. Boom, ba-dum. And then it could have been, you know, 60 minutes in again.
Yeah, worth saying as well that in Argentina for a fair few years now, there haven't been away fans in the ground because of, you know, the problems there have been. Yeah. And, you know, we're sat there in the Monumental and looking up at the sort of you could clearly see where the away section is because it's kind of fenced off for Libertadores nights. And I do think that not having away fans in a ground changes that slightly, because when the opposition side has the ball in the final third or they're having a good 10 minutes, you kind of sometimes, as a football fan, as a home football fan, you'll glance up at the away fans and see them bouncing. You think, oh, God, we've got to get through this period or we can't concede here or Jesus, they're on top. And you kind of shut up. And I think that yin and yang, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but it's certainly something that I've sort of grown up with, and anyone in European football will get used to that, having away fans. And not having away fans, you lose a little bit of that. Like, if the opposing side scores a cracker, there's that, like, 2 seconds of silence, and then you hear the away fans.
There was somebody this week, and I can't remember which game and which stadium they were talking about now, but I saw this very small comment of how difficult it is to be a home supporter in the ground that was being discussed when an away goal goes in, because it might have been Wembley, and they were talking about the Euro 2020 final against Italy and how difficult it is if you're, particularly obviously Wembley, generally 50-50 split of fans, to get away from the atmosphere because it's of an away team or like the opposition scoring in Wembley, because that atmosphere reverberates around the ground so well. And so when a goal goes in against you at Wembley, there's no escaping it, and it feels even more intimidating and even more pressure, because you can hear a really audible almost right in front of you cheer coming from the opposite end of the ground. And I thought that was actually a really interesting point, because you do definitely miss that in the league games here. And, you know, the greatest atmosphere I think I've ever been in was the Coppa Italia final. And you just had Milan at one end, Juve fans at the other, and it was just a call and answer back and forth across the pitch for the hours build up before the game, let alone during the game itself as well. And it was a beautiful thing to listen to, whereas there is a point during that River game this weekend where you get to 60, 70 minutes in and you're like, yeah, I get it. Like, it's just a background noise as opposed to... But I also want to say, I really want to add this. How much better is a football stadium and the build-up to a game when there's no unbearably loud PA announcements and music being played? You can slag it off maybe during the game if it's not your thing, but having fans generate the atmosphere before a game is infinitely better than what we get in England now, where there is music playing in English football stadiums up until kickoff, like the moment they kick it in the first half and the second half. And it's awful because it sucks so much of that crowd atmosphere away. And I think it's intended to do that as well.
But it's compensating because there is no crowd atmosphere. Because people go in the grounds 5 minutes before kickoff. Sure, but I mean, these days, 20 minutes before, unless it's a massive Champions League night at Old Trafford or Anfield or something, there's no atmosphere.
Yeah.
You know, but that's... they feel like they have to be saying stuff over the tannoy and all this kind of stuff.
But is it a...
the mosquitoes are coming. There's a separate podcast that we had.
Is it a self-fulfilling prophecy of you put the music in, it drowns out the sounds, people make less sounds, people don't go in early, so then they need the music, so they make less sounds, so they drown it out. I think it's very much they're completely interlinked in, you know, a circle of negativity in that sense. I'd love them to just not have it. And even if it's like, you know, an FA Cup final or something, and just let half of Wembley do one and half of Wembley do the other, because it brings me so much more joy to hear supporters than it does to hear whatever freaking the next great pop song that's going on or whatever.
Like the River Tannoy, they read out the teams.
And inaudibly.
Inaudibly.
A single player.
I think the goal scorers, but maybe not. There was nothing. And then there was something at the end that was like, you know, don't do anything naughty. Yeah, basically. But yeah, it was absolutely none. And there are like TV screens at the Monumental for like those in the like upper deck to see it again. But I would say 70% of the ground can't see that.
No.
It's just that sort of upper tier, really.
They're living in the game for the full 90 minutes and the hour before kickoff. Even like, again, you know, I've been to Vélez. They have a big, there's a grassy kind of roundabout out just outside the stadium where the main supporters will congregate quite a lot and they'll drink and everything like that. And we had the same this week where we went down a street and suddenly there's a few flares going off. There's just fans drinking Fernet and Coke out of like chopped in half Coke bottles and drinking beers and stuff. And when we were walking down that street initially, with Zul, who was the guy that was kind of taking us through, he was like, do you want to take pictures and video? And I was like, yeah, you know, it's a great thing to see, because that in England would be too rowdy, possibly, and already a bit aggressive. And unfortunately, it was the Argentinian police that rocked up before kickoff in a unbelievably overly aggressive manner. Like 6-7 motorbikes, 2 people on each bike, and the guy driving the bike goes down this small street, revs it, still going quite aggressively into the crowd of people. And then the guy on the back jumping off, baton straight away up, like, I don't speak Spanish.
Yeah, I mean, it's so difficult as well to know exactly what was going on.
Yeah,
they
might not have been allowed on that like street and blocking
completely
the road,
like, you don't know.
And the way it was handled, it was just, I mean, you saw our Airbnb guy suddenly, oh, let's get the fuck out of here. Yeah. Like, we need to get moving.
I think the relationship, though, between like Argentine fans and the police is so complicated,
But it was just, but yeah, vision from what we saw.
Completely, like, outside looking in, it looked pretty heavy-handed. But if you're not, maybe it doesn't, I don't know.
As soon as the bikes went through the first, like, group of people and started to push the next load of supporters back, the guys they'd gone past just circled back around, and they've all been drinking and got glass bottles, and they're just launching glass bottles at the back of the heads of the police officers. They're all wearing helmets, thankfully. But it's just like, oh, okay, so let's fight aggression with aggression. And then Zul is definitely like, we need to go. We need to go now. There was like 3 women in our group, 7 of us or so in total. It's just like, let's move, keep going. It was, I quite enjoyed it. I didn't ever feel unsafe, but I could definitely see a moment where if a police bike pulls up a little closer to us, where it suddenly goes from being like, oh, wow, this is crazy, to like, oh, Jesus, don't hit me.
Yeah, there's that little edge. All right, well, yeah, that was the Monumental. I mean, it's kind of, if you're here in Argentina, in Buenos Aires, you've got to do it. You've got to go to one of these grounds because it's something totally unique.
Worth the Airbnb experience doing it that way? Or would it be... Because
there's a million ways you can do it here, by the way. You can buy it, obviously, outside the ground. Like, you can go through, like, official outlet. Well, aren't a million ways, actually, because you've got to be a member, basically.
Yeah, River and Boca, you have to be a member to be able to get the tickets. So it's easier to go through an Airbnb kind of trip. You'll pay over the odds for some of it, but you'll be guaranteed to get in unless they pull it last minute, like happened in 2019.
Yeah. Hit us up if you need tickets, because we've got the inside track on most of the clubs.
But then, like, yeah, you can get them cheap at the ground as well if you just want to do it yourself, which is also an experience. If you can find some people to go with, it's much better. Mm-hmm. But if you're in Argentina, it has to be done. Mm-hmm. Has to be done.
Just one final question, just because it's so hard to talk about River without talking about Boca. Oh, by the way, yeah. I mean, what do you think Boca think when they see the Monumental like that? River have done it.
Sellouts. No. Because it's the... River's the, like, richer, more affluent area, considered the more richer, more affluent club. And so I genuinely think... We'll have to ask Nico, the Boca fan. But I genuinely think a lot of Boca fans would look at it and being like, ugh, look at you going all corporate. In the same way that I probably look at, like, Barcelona's new ground that's coming up and being like, ugh, that's got no character.
The toilets are clean. Like, ugh, what's going on here? Like,
yeah, awful. You know, your stadium doesn't shake when it's rocking. Embarrassing. We can move the concrete foundations of the Bombonera.